I think it's good to get out of the world and into the nature, which is to say, into the world, because a lot of the man-made things that we do don't really make sense. At the end of the day, and at the beginning of time, we're just hairless monkeys running around, but we take ourselves very, very seriously. As a result, we do a lot of strange things to the world.
That's a man who goes into nature in order to help reset.
We're asking, do men need to spend time in nature to become better men? On this episode of The Gender Knot, the podcast where we untangle the new masculinity and femininity. We're your hosts. I'm Nasrin Tavakoli-Farr, or Naz in short.
And I'm Jonathan Freeman. We're asking whether men need to spend time in nature in order to be better men.
If you can get out of a life or death situation unscathed, it makes you feel pretty good about yourself, and it also makes you a little more aware of the things going on around you.
Hi, we're on hiatus, but we're going to be back in June, and in the meantime, we wanted to bring you a bonus episode about whether men need nature to be better men.
So yeah, this question comes out of this observation I've had for a long time, where it seems like a lot of men go off to nature when they're stressed or when they're upset or when they want to sort something out, which it's a proper dude thing to do. So I was kind of quite intrigued into looking at this. So yeah, we want to know whether men need to spend time in nature to become better men. Jonathan, is that something you do? Do you go off to the woods when you're stressed?
I absolutely do not. When I get stressed, I go to New York and I get a bagel.
But do you know what I mean? It's like I've never heard of a woman do that. Like when women talk about the outdoors, they're like, yeah, let's go camp in this great place. We'll have lots of fun. Let's go as a group. I've never heard of like when a woman's upset being like, I need to go, you know, on this hike on the coast on my own for 5 days. I swear I'm not imagining this. This is like a thing dudes do.
It is a thing I think that some dudes do. So I freely, freely walked into this topic, this question, deeply skeptical. I have a visceral loathing of Thoreau, who was made famous by Walden and, you know, the original dude going into the woods and with his thoughts. The loathing probably stems from the high school assignment of writing a 20-page paper on that ridiculous book. But so I agree to the topic with a level of general skepticism, but I was turned around, but in a very specific way. And also because I finally heard our last episode with our good friend Dan Carroll of Fine and Dandy with Dan and Andy about men and feelings. And I think it has a lot to do with this topic. But you had mentioned these three essays.
We're going to speak to Seth Miller, who is a brand consultant and is also an extremely good friend of mine. And I basically wanted to talk to Seth about this topic because he's one of these super outdoorsy Californians who does stuff like this. And I was like, he will get it. Basically, there's three essays that we talk about. And I read a ton of essays. And these three essays are three of my most read in that I revisit them often. So the first one is Jonathan Franzen, Farther Away. It was in The New Yorker a few years ago. Basically, it's about how when his good friend, the writer David Foster Wallace, committed suicide, so Franzen threw himself into work. And a few years after David Foster Wallace's death, Franzen decided to go mourn his friend's very traumatic death. And basically, he went to this small island, which was like 12 hours off the coast of Chile, and he was fending for himself. And I always read this essay with all these really conflicted feelings because on one hand, I find it just a really annoying, grandiose dude thing to do. Like, oh, I'm going to go on some like really difficult like
kind of
adventure.
Kind of a privileged dude thing to do.
That's true as well. But you know what I mean? It's kind of like, and this essay is super interesting because when you read it, you know, he's gone off to mourn his friend's death, but he's spending all this time trying to do really basic tasks. And I'm sitting there thinking, how does this help? But having said that, intuitively, I kind of get it. Like, and I, you know, I needed help for someone like Seth to explain to me why this sort of makes sense. So we talk about that essay. We talk about an essay called Pond Scum by Catherine Schultz, which is about Thoreau, who you mentioned. But she basically says that Thoreau was a complete fraud and a hypocrite. And that
I'm totally going to read that essay.
It is really funny. And that when he went off and stayed in a cabin on Walden Pond, that cabin was like 20 minutes away from his mom's house. And he went home for cookies every other day. And he constantly had guests. And that he really wasn't in the wilderness. The takeaway from that essay is basically not just that he's a hypocrite, but basically he seems like he just doesn't really like people, which is something else I'm skeptical about this whole men going off into wilderness. Because I think it's basically a little bit avoidant. It's like, let's avoid people. And it comes up in our third essay as well, The Miseducation of John Muir, which is by Justin Noble in Atlas Obscura. And it's about the great Scottish naturalist John Muir, who I think established a lot of your national parks in the US. And
yes.
The author basically says that it's not so much that Muir loved nature. He just didn't really like people. he was like a massive racist and stuff. I laugh because, like, I don't know, intuitively, again, I've always had this suspicion of, like, dude goes off into nature. Is like, is that just to avoid people? So, yeah, we're going to untangle. And
I mean, very famously, Teddy Roosevelt, you know, his mother and his wife died on the same day. And he went off on, like, safari or he went, like, basically went to, like, I think it was Yellowstone Park for, like, a couple months, you know, to deal with that trauma. And he was actually close to his mother. So it wasn't like just sort of some sort of a distant matriarchal figure in his life.
Okay, so let's talk to our guest. So this is Seth Miller. I called him up in New York, and you'll hear lots of New York sounds. And we try to answer the question, do men need nature to become better men? Okay, so Seth, our question is, do men need to spend time in nature to become better men?
Yes, absolutely.
Why?
We clutter our minds with very ordinary, habitual things that make us comfortable, that make us happy, but that distance ourselves from the reality that we actually live in. I think going into nature helps us evacuate all of that and be in a place where we're vulnerable, where we're humbled, where we're appreciative, and where we just don't exactly have control. And we're reminded that, yeah, we're these little animals on a beautiful blue sphere.
So you're saying it's about going back to basics, basically.
I mean, going back to basics, but just remembering the world that we've made is not the entire world.
We make all these things, but we don't need them, or they obscure us from actually seeing what's important. Is that kind of what you're getting at?
I mean, to some degree, yes. I think that our valuation of things is oftentimes skewed. I mean, you'll see it in companies focusing on just having awesome quarters and then kind of damning themselves in the long run because all they did was switch out a headphone jack to drive sales versus making something that's really cool that people would want to use over the long term. I mean, it's people just focusing on getting that next promotion instead of doing something they really want to do. And then 20 years down the line going like, shit, where did the time go? What have I done?
So if the Apple CEO spent more time in nature, do you think he'd have made a better iPhone going forward?
I'm not sure. I mean, the last thing I read about Tim Cook was that he was like hiking in Yosemite, so maybe the nature perspective is off.
Yeah, he went so back to basics. He's like, we don't need all these jacks. Okay, so let's go back. But what is it about being in nature that would make someone, and would make a man specifically, more aware of what is important?
I think being truly vulnerable. Basically, if you screw up, you might die.
Okay. Why is that so important for becoming a better man?
I think that it helps men approach every situation with both humility and confidence. If you can get out of a life or death situation unscathed, it makes you feel pretty good about yourself, and it also makes you a little more aware of the things going on around you. Just, I mean, reminding that life might end kind of makes you appreciate everything that is there. It makes us appreciate everybody else. Like, sometimes dudes can be completely self-absorbed. When that preoccupation is fulfilled and there's nothing but, like, us and the vast unknown, we really appreciate everything that we're taking for granted.
Okay, so it's interesting you say this, because this is where I start to disagree with you. You're talking about how being out in nature and having to learn to survive would make a man humble and confident. So I'm reminded of the essay about John Muir. The author, Justin Noble, says, quote, his views on humanity, though, reflect deep ambivalence, and in nature, he seems to see a blank slate, a chance to write his own story upon the land. This sort of theme comes up, I think, in all three of those essays. I feel like it's all about Muir, Thoreau, Franzen kind of imposing themselves on nature. It sort of gets to my main beef about this whole, like, men being into the wilderness and men going off into nature when they're feeling sad or when they want to sort something out, right? It's basically a way to avoid people, because people are complicated and messy and stuff, and in a way, like, conquering nature can be more straightforward sometimes? I mean, provided you survive, right? It can be more, provided you survive, it can be more straightforward than dealing with people, you know? Like, the essay on Muir and on Thoreau is saying, it's basically saying that neither of them liked people. That's why they were into nature.
Which I also, I have some respect for.
I just see this, like, dude goes off into wilderness as the height of avoidance of, I need to deal with people. I'm above that. You know what I mean? There's a bit of an arrogance to it, I actually think.
Yeah.
Because it's interesting. You say it's humble, but I'm like, I'm above people. I don't need to deal with them.
I mean, Thoreau makes good points. I think there is a reason why some of his writing endured. Maybe if he was actually in wilderness, he just wouldn't have had the wherewithal to write things down, because he would have been in complete Zen bliss and not needed pen or paper or words. Having a little dose of civilization, I think, could be good, but it seemed like he needed to be, like, airlifted and dropped maybe 100 miles out and then have to actually reckon with something.
Which brings us to the Franzen essay. So it's all about Jonathan Franzen going off to this island in the middle of, you know, like 12 hours away from the coast of Chile. And it's basically about trying to mourn the death of his friend David Foster Wallace. And what was really striking about that was that, and again, I talk about avoidance. Like, he's talking about how, like, doing basic tasks took so long because it was so difficult because of the conditions.
Yeah.
I'm sitting there reading that thinking, like, this sounds like he's trying to avoid actually feeling grief, like actually having to feel sad. It's like, oh, look at me, I'm trying to mourn by, like, doing something that's so difficult that I'm distracting myself from the pain.
Well, his close friend did die. What else can you do but move forward and try to help people overcome what consumed his friend?
That Franzen essay, I felt very conflicted about, and I'll tell you why I felt conflicted. It made me think of when I broke up with an ex-boyfriend, and I'm not going to say anything negative, by the way. It's a very neutral story. I remember breaking up with an ex-boyfriend, and, you know, we were both really sad about it, and it was this really long, complicated thing. And I remember shortly after we broke up, he turned around and he told me about how he was going to help some guy move his boat. And I was like, what are you talking about? And he was like, going to go on this trip. And there was this dude who needed to move his boat, and my ex was going to go help him. And I just remember sitting there thinking, first of all, I was like, what are you, like Jack London or something? It sounded like a proper, like, such a grandiose dude thing to do. And I was just sitting there thinking, okay, so he's really sad. He's going to travel all this way to help some guy move his boat, this dude he doesn't even know, and they're going to be sad in the middle of the sea, I don't know, drinking whiskey at night and being sad or something. Like, how is that going to help him feel better? And while I was saying it, I was thinking, you know, I actually think going and helping someone he has never met move his boat and be really sad with him in the middle of the sea is exactly what he needs right now. And I feel like I've had this happen with a lot of guys where, like, something happens and they're like, I'm going off to the woods. And part of me is like, what? But then intuitively, I kind of can see it. Intuitively, I'm like, yeah, I can kind of see why secluding yourself in a really difficult thing could help. I don't know why, though.
Huh.
You being a dude who I imagine would do something like that. I, like, need some help, some explanation as to, like, why that works. It doesn't sound like actually feeling sad about what happened and having to deal with it, but it seems to work.
I mean, honestly, I think when a part of your life more or less dies, the solution is to, like, fill it with life.
How does nature do that? How does, like, going off to the woods or...
appreciating how big and possible anything in life is. If I'm consumed by grief, then even though I have a million things to be thankful for, I'm not paying attention to them.
But why does being in nature help with that appreciation?
First of all, it's beautiful. There's nothing like going up to Big Sur and jumping off of a rock into the ocean, or hiking out into hot springs and, like, just smelling trees, seeing stars, hearing the wind. It's wonderful. But it's also very uncomfortable. I mean, it can get cold. Little things like getting water can either poison you or take a lot of time. I mean, it's hard. It will take hours to do the basics, which then makes everything feel much better, I guess, by comparison.
That in itself sounds like avoidance, though. That's exactly how I felt about the Franzen. Where I was like, sounds like he's avoiding grieving. But it kind of makes sense as well.
It's also like a physical experience of it, though.
What, of grief? Like you're physically, oh, that's interesting. Is that what you mean?
I mean, it can be. Forcing yourself to be in a position of loneliness, you can't really hide from anything. And so even if you are just spending 4 hours a day getting water and cooking food, you're still by yourself. You just can't really escape.
Oh, interesting. So, okay, this is generalizations, but the more traditionally feminine thing to do is to, like, get together with a few good friends and cry when you're sad about something.
Really?
Kind of, yeah. Well, which is why I find this, like, dude goes off into the woods because, like, they're sad is, like, really grandiose to me. But this is interesting because you're saying, no, you kind of can't run away from it because it's just you and your thoughts.
Yeah,
it sounds terrifying.
Well, but I mean, isn't that the point? Like,
No, this is interesting.
That needs to be experienced. You just kind of have to experience it, and no matter how you try to run away from it, how Franzen tried to run away from it for years by burying himself in work, eventually it's going to come up, and so you may as well just dive into it. I guess in his grandiose way, by risking his life on some cliffs, and just facing nothing but himself for like a couple weeks.
There's a passage here which I'm going to read out. He says, this is when he's like, you know, having this really hard time trying to do this basic task. And he says, I was doing a lot of different things at every moment. Even as I was crying, I was also scanning the ground for the missing piece of my tent and taking my camera out of my pocket and trying to capture the celestial beauty of the light and the landscape and damning myself for doing this when I should have been purely mourning.
Yeah.
Okay, so there's all these ways in which being in the wilderness can help us overcome hard things, or like to learn how to be resilient. But what about being a better man? Because you were saying to me that you think it's something about men being in nature, which I found interesting because...
I think women in nature too, possibly.
I find as a woman, just the very fact that I have periods means that on a regular basis, I'm reminded that I am just an animal, basically. And I find that quite humbling and also quite empowering too. But I find, yeah, it's a really good reminder that, you know, you aren't above stuff.
Yeah.
So I'm just interested in the sort of being in nature, but being a better man.
I think that men are very much instinct driven, but it's instinct in a modern environment that basically leads to overindulgence, a lot of drinking, dumb behavior.
And then how does being in nature help you be a better man?
I think that...
And what does that mean as well? Like, what do you define as the kind of man that you want to be?
Getting shit done without resisting that, if it makes sense. I mean, just like...
That sounds very New York of you.
Well, getting shit done and doing the right thing. I think that's kind of what being a good man is.
How does going to nature on a regular basis kind of help?
I think that it makes us more appreciative of what we have. And then it also just... makes us more confident, but that confidence based in competence.
Okay, so in the essay on Thoreau, Catherine Schultz talked about Laura Ingalls Wilder, who also wrote about living in the wilderness and had a very different experience. So Schultz says this, she says, Wilder lived what Thoreau merely played at, and her books are not only more joyful and interesting than Walden, but also, when reread, 1,000 times more harrowing. Real isolation presents real risks, both emotional and mortal. And, had Thoreau truly lived at a remove from other people, he might have valued them more. Instead, his case against community rested on an ersatz experience of doing without it. I think this is a really interesting point because, I don't know, it seems like quite a feminine thing of it's okay to ask people for help and that community is good. It kind of just made sense to me reading that.
I agree. When she broke it down and got to the facts of what Thoreau's experiment was, while I did think that his experiment was interesting, it wasn't as real as what the other author... That seemed like a much more real, visceral experience. And also, I wish that that would have been the argument. Just like, this is the actual nature experience we need to be presenting our kids. This is what makes sense versus... this kind of weird experience from like a quasi-hermit who was very cold and just didn't really appreciate people because he was never really without them.
But it also reminds me of the Muir, basically. I found like it's just like this distrust of people, you know? And in the Muir essay, Justin Noble says, while he revered the plants discovered on his walk to the Gulf, he rejected many of the humans. I do think there is some sort of downplaying of humans and community. It sounds like dudes who just didn't like people and didn't get on with them.
I mean, again, I can kind of to some degree sympathize with, because humans arguably destroy the planet. I mean, Mirza seemed like a pretty, like, I would love to hang out with that guy.
Wait, there's another bit from the Muir essay I love where it goes, he really despised dirty peoples, explains Harold Wood, an educator with the Sierra Club, the environmental organization Muir founded in 1892. He couldn't understand why people were dirty when bears and deer were not dirty. Okay, so to sum up, our question was, do men need to spend more time in nature to become better men? I was initially very skeptical, but I'm coming round to some of your arguments. Yeah, you're saying it gives you a certain confidence. Because for me, the definition of like a good man is someone who has integrity, is there for others, has a sense of responsibility. So maybe if you know that you can take care of yourself, it kind of helps you better take care of others. I can kind of see that argument a little bit.
Yeah. I mean, I think that a lot of times people do bad things when they're least confident.
And so knowing that you can fend for yourself gives you the confidence to then also be a better member of the community.
Yeah, and tend to others as well. If you can start a fire and cook dinner, then you can also feed other people. I guess for me, some problems that I see with a lot of men is that they don't really step up when they need to. They step up at times where it just feels kind of petty or it's trivial. And so I think, or just remembering what really matters and then standing for it, acting for it, seeing beyond oneself tends to make people better.
So that was Seth Miller and Naz talking about whether men need to be in nature in order to become better men. I was deeply skeptical about just generally the question, and I think you turned me around, but not probably in the way that Seth Miller may hope.
Oh, wow. Okay.
So, first of all, I don't agree with the premise. I don't think that necessarily men need to be in nature in order to be better men.
Well, it was a question. It's not a statement. We're exploring the question.
But he was, you know, that was his conclusion, was a strong mm-hmm. yes, you know, that yes, we need to be in nature in order to be better. So I disagree with the general premise. However, and this is a big, important however, as I've listened to both of our feelings episodes recently, I think what it is that, and Dan referenced this when he was talking about journaling, and I was talking about this when I was talking about, you know, my return from Iraq and between my first and second
in the
tours.
In the previous episode.
In our previous fantastic episode that if anybody hasn't listened to, should listen to now. I think what it is I think men do need activity, and you are very skeptical of this. Men do need some sort of activity to sort of help disengage them on a certain level and be able to engage with our feelings. And I think you are continually skeptical of the fact that it can be avoidance. And I think Dan and I, and I think even Seth, mentioned that yes, it absolutely can be avoidance if your goal is to avoid. But if your goal is to engage with those feelings, then it's actually really necessary that activity and the action is really important in order to disengage. Because I think what tends to happen with men is that we get caught up in our minutiae.
Yeah.
Basically, we get caught up in the bullshit on everyday life. And this is why it's sort of like the quote-unquote escape is necessary. We can get caught up in the minutiae, in sort of like the momentary goals and focuses of life, and in the effort to pull back, we need something a little bit more dramatic, if you will, mm-hmm. in order to pull back and sort of make sure that we're able to engage with these feelings. And I think this also, I think you and I had sort of talked about this in our first feelings episode, where mm-hmm. you and I talked about how these men sort of like don't deal with their feelings, and then they just sort of emotionally vomit, you mm-hmm. know, on you or on other women. And obviously that is not the goal of healthy, mature emotional stability. A lot of it is due to the fact of an inability or lack of desire to disengage in some way and to deal with those emotions in a healthy, you know, again, engaged, interactive kind of way. And I think for Dan, it was journaling. For Seth, it is being out in nature. For me, you know, all about the New York bagel. Getting a bagel. I mean,
okay, so
in fairness, they are really good bagels.
I mean, one thing I, in the previous episode with Dan and with my chat with Seth right now, I am coming round to this notion that, you know, some sort of activity can help to sort of maybe loosen the knot so you can start talking about feelings. And I was a little bit convinced by what Seth was saying, because in a sense, like, yeah, you're in the middle of nowhere with no one. There's really nothing to think about but purifying your water and whatever it is that you're stressed about, you know?
Right. So, or putting up your tent.
Yeah, I feel like I'm sort of slightly coming around to that. But I will say my skepticism still is that I still feel like maybe this gives away the fact that obviously I've not spent a lot of time in the wilderness. But my skepticism comes with the fact that I think once you learn how to survive, in a way, isn't that quite straightforward? Like, basically, people are complicated. People are dangerous, in a sense. When I say dangerous, it's because, like, we're dealing with complex feelings and, you know, with just other messy people, and we're messy as well. And I feel like that is a lot more difficult than, I don't know, like, once you learn how to fend for yourself in a certain spot, like, isn't that pretty straightforward?
Yeah.
Or does that just show that I haven't, like, been outdoors enough?
Yeah, I mean, like, listen, I mean, for me, like, I don't really do the outdoorsy thing in terms of going, you know, and finding a tent to pitch and blah, 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 because, you know, in terms of army life, you know, it just brings back all these fun times of weeks in, you know, in training, which is not fun. Like, there's no such thing as army training that is fun, because it's sort of like the entire dynamic of the universe seems to focus on making it as miserable as possible. So you're like, I can't wait to deploy to Iraq or Afghanistan because this sucks. I mean, let me tell you how much fun it is training for Iraq in the middle of a Kansas winter. You're like, I can't wait till it's 120 degrees.
Dude, I always find it really weird that, you know, you've been in the army, because I find, like, in our dynamic, I don't know, you're the more feminine one who wants to go to New York and have a bagel, and I'm the more sort of masculine, sort of like, I don't know,
well,
let's do something hard and, like, persevere through pain. You know what I mean? Okay, so basically next time you're stressed with your PhD, you're not going to be pitching a tent in, I don't know, the Blue Mountains or whatever to,
no,
I don't know.
Not at all. In fact, I'm literally going to New York for a bagel.
But I have to say, though, I liked what Seth said about, like, it gives men a confidence based on competence, which I thought was quite a good point.
Right.
Because it's not one of these sort of BS confidence things of, oh, just love yourself, everyone is great and everyone is special. It's like, no, like, you're great because you survived for, like, 12 days in X shitty location. So
right.
You can do it. I thought that was a pretty cool point. And I was like, yeah, I can kind of see this now.
And this,
I can see this.
Right. And I think this is sort of where that army thing for me comes in. Like, I know I can do that. Like, I don't need to go out for 12 days and be miserable.
Ooh.
You know, like, I know I can do that because I've done it. You know, I've either done it with a
unit. I know, but it sounds
a bit
braggy,
unit.
Though.
It's not braggy. It's no. I mean, I don't have a question about my competence of staying alive. I've stayed alive during, you know, 29
months. No, I know, but
months of deployment. So I'm feeling pretty comfortable about that.
I know, but I'm not talking about you. I'm talking about a lot of men in general, most of whom don't have an army experience. I can see that, you know, doing something where physically you're able to take care of yourself.
No, I get that. I understand. I'm saying, like, for me, like, that could that's probably also part of the reason I don't find that necessary.
Okay, cool. So do men need to spend time in nature to become better men? Yeah, it can help. I can see that, yeah. But it can also be avoidance, so, yeah.
Right. And I would sum up by saying I think men need activity to help make them better men. And some men find it, nature's the thing that helps be the catalyst for that. But some men find bagels in New York similarly helpful. No judgments. You heard from Seth Miller on this episode of The Gentleman, where we asked whether men need to spend time in nature in order to be better men.
It was hosted by me. I'm Nastran Tavakoli-Farr, or Naz in short.
And it was hosted by me. I'm Jonathan Freeman.
It was co-produced by Sam Baker and Jonathan Blackwell. We're on hiatus. We'll be back with a new season in June, but you'll hear from us again before then.
Thanks very much.